with the tension on the line, he thought. Deeper into the tunnel he went, stepping cautiously, now and then running his gloved hands over the strangely smooth walls. Fuchida lost track of time as he chipped at the tunnel walls here and there, filling the sample bags that dangled from his harness belt. The tether made it uncomfortable to push forward, attached to his harness at the chest. It had to pass over his shoulder or around his waist, clumsy at best. Then he noticed that the circle of light cast by his helmet lamp showed an indentation off toward the left, a mini alcove that seemed lighter in color than the rest of the glossy black tunnel walls. Fuchida edged closer to it, leaning slightly into the niche to examine it. A bubble of lava did this, he thought. The niche was barely big enough for a man to enter, a man not encumbered with a hard suit and bulky backpack, that is. Fuchida stood at the entrance to the narrow niche, peering inside, wondering. And then he noticed a streak of red, the color of iron rust. Rust? Why here and not elsewhere? He pushed in closer, squeezing into the narrow opening to inspect the rust spot. Yes, definitely the color of iron rust. He took a scraper from the toolkit at his waist, nearly fumbling it in his awkwardly gloved fingers. If I drop it, I won't be able to bend down to pick it up, not in this narrow cleft, he realized. The red stain crumbled at the touch of the scraper. Strange, thought Fuchida. Not like the basalt at all. Could it be wet? No. Liquid water cannot exist at this low air pressure. But what is the pressure inside the rock? Perhaps. The red stuff crumbled easily into the sample bag he held beneath it with trembling fingers. It must be iron oxide that is being eroded by water somehow. Water and iron. Siderophiles. Bacteria that metabolize iron and water. Fuchida was as certain of it as he was of his own existence. His heart was racing. A colony of iron-eating bacteria living inside the caldera of Olympus Mons. Who knew what else might be found deeper down? It was only when he sealed up the sample bag and placed it in the plastic box dangling from his belt that he heard the strange rumbling sound. Through the thickness of his helmet it sounded muted, far off. But still, any sound at all this deep in the tunnel was startling. Fuchida started to back away from the crumbling, rust-red cleft. The rumbling sound seemed to grow louder, like the growl of some prowling beast. It was nonsense, of course, but he thought the tunnel walls were shaking slightly, trembling. "It's you who are trembling, foolish man," he admonished himself. Something in the back of his mind said, "Fear is healthy. It is nothing to be ashamed of if you..." The rusted area of rock dissolved into a burst of exploding steam that lifted Fuchida off his feet and slammed him painfully against the far wall of the lava tube. Evening, Sol 49. Fuchida nearly blacked out as his head banged against the back of his helmet. He sagged to the floor of the tunnel, his visor completely fogged, jagged flares of stars flashing in his eyes, his skull thundering with pain. With a teeth-gritting effort of iron will, he kept himself from slipping into unconsciousness. Despite the pounding in his head, he forced himself to stay awake, alert. "Do not faint," he commanded himself. "Do not allow yourself to take the cowardly way. You must remain awake if you hope to remain alive." He felt perspiration beading his forehead, dripping into his eyes, forcing him to blink and squint. Then a wave of anger swept over him. "How stupid you are," he railed at himself. "A hydrothermal vent. Water. Liquid water here on Mars. You should have known. You should have guessed. The heat flow, the rusted iron. There must be siderophiles here. Bacteria that metabolize iron and water. They weakened the wall, and you scraped enough of it away for the pressure to blow through the wall. You caused a geyser to erupt." "Yes," he agreed with himself. "Now that you've made the discovery, you must live to report it to the rest of the world." His visor was still badly fogged. Fuchida groped for the control stud at his wrist that would turn up his suit fans and clear the visor. He thought he found the right keypad and pushed it. Nothing changed. In fact, now that he listened for it, he could not hear the soft buzz of his suit fans at all. Except for his own labored breathing, there was nothing but silence. Wait. Be calm. Think. Call Rodriguez. Tell him what's happened. Tomas, I've had a little accident. No response. Rodriguez, can you hear me? Silence. Slowly, carefully, he flexed both his arms, then his legs. His body ached, but there didn't seem to be any broken bones. Still, the air fans remained silent, and the beads of sweat dripped into his eyes. Blinking, squinting, he saw that the visor was beginning to clear up on its own. The hydrothermal vent must have been a weak one, he thought thankfully. He could hear no more rumbling. The tunnel did not seem to be shaking now. Almost reluctantly, he wormed his arm up to eye level and held the wrist keyboard close to his visor. The keyboard was blank. Electrical malfunction. Frantically, he tapped at the keyboard. Nothing. Heater, heat exchanger, air fans, radio. All gone. I'm a dead man. Cold panic hit him like a blow to the heart. That's why you no longer hear the air circulation fans. The suit battery must have been damaged when I slammed against the wall. Fuchida could hear his pulse thundering in his ears. Calm down, he commanded himself. That's not so bad. The suit has enough air in it for an hour or more. And it's insulated very thoroughly. You won't freeze. Not for several hours, at least. You can get by without the cooling fans. For a while. It was when he tried to stand up that the real fear hit him. His right ankle flared with agony. Broken or badly sprained, Fuchida realized. I can't stand on it. I can't get out of here. Then the irony really struck him. I might be the first man to die of heat prostration on Mars. The problem is, Rodriguez said to himself, that we only brought one climbing harness, and Mitsuo's wearing it. By the time I go back to the plane, get the other harness, and come back here and set it up, he could be dead. I've got to go down there without a tether, without any of the climbing tools that he's carrying with him. Shit. Rodriguez shook his head inside his helmet. Can't leave him. It's already getting dark, and he'd never survive overnight. On the other hand, there's a damned good chance that we'll both die down there. Double shit. For long, useless moments, he stared down into the dark depths of the caldera, in complete shadow now as the sun crept closer to the distant horizon. Show no fear, Rodriguez repeated to himself. Not even to yourself. He nodded inside his helmet. Yeah, easy to say. Now get the snakes in my guts to believe it. Still, he started down, walking slowly, deliberately, gripping the tether hand over hand as he descended. It became totally dark within a few steps of leaving the caldera's rim. The only light was the patch of glow cast by his helmet lamp, and the dark rock all around him seemed to swallow that up greedily. He planted his booted feet carefully, deliberately, knowing that carbon dioxide from the air was already starting to freeze out on the bitterly cold rock. Rodriguez cast a glance up at the dimming sky, like a prisoner taking his last desperate look at freedom before entering his dungeon. At least I can follow the tether, he thought. He moved with ponderous deliberation, worried about slipping on patches of ice. If I get disabled, we're both toast, he told himself. Take it easy. Don't rush it. Don't make any mistakes. Slowly, slowly he descended. By the time the tether led him to the mouth of the lava tube, he could no longer see the scant slice of sky above. It was completely black. If there were stars winking at him up there, he could not see them through the tinted visor of his helmet. He peered into the tunnel. It was like staring into a well of blackness. "Hey, Mitsuo," he called. "Can you hear me?" No response. He's either dead or unconscious, Rodriguez thought. He's laying deep down that tunnel someplace, and I've got to go find him, or what's left of him. He took a deep breath. No fear, he reminded himself. Down the dark tunnel he plodded. ignoring the fluttering of his innards, paying no attention to the